President Donald Trump attacked four women of color in Congress, continuing to question their loyalty to the country and suggesting they should leave America. Despite criticism from Democrats that his comments about the four minority congresswomen are racist, Mr. Trump went on a 20-minute diatribe about them, saying they were welcome to leave the country if they do not like his policies on issues such as immigration and defending Israel.
They're always telling us how to run it, how to do this, how to do that. You know what? If they don't love it, tell them to leave it. I don't know.
Mr. Trump tweeted on the weekend that the four progressive representatives known as the Squad, that's Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, and Ayanna Pressley of Ohio should go back where they came from, even though all are U.S. citizens and three are U.S. born. The House of Representatives has voted to block a resolution to impeach the president, effectively killing the measure for now, but not burying the issue that divided Democrats.
The declaration by the World Health Organization comes after...
The resolution sponsor, Democratic Representative Al Green, was seeking to capitalize on growing criticism of Mr. Trump after the president's recent attacks on minority congresswomen. Green had failed twice before to get an impeachment resolution passed by Wednesday, marked the first time the full House had addressed the matter since Democrats took the majority earlier this year. House of Representatives voted on Wednesday to hold Attorney General William Barr and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross in criminal contempt for defying congressional subpoenas related to the U.S. Census. The measure, which passed 230 to 198, was a response to the cabinet members' failure to produce documents requested by House Democrats as part of an investigation. This is VOA News. The lawyer and family of Shakeel Afridi, the Pakistani physician who helped the United States track down former al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden, told VOA that Afridi continues to suffer in prison under dire conditions. The defense lawyer expressed optimism that the fate of his client would be discussed during the planned meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan next week at the White House. Speaking to VOA, Jameel Afridi, Shakeel Afridi's brother, expressed frustration that the doctor's case has not been resolved in over 8 years. Jameel Afridi said that he last visited his brother, who he says has become very weak, on July 6th. U.S. officials have not said publicly if the two leaders will discuss the case, but according to a statement released by the White House last week, both sides will discuss a host of issues, including counterterrorism and joint Pakistan efforts to bring stability to the South Asia region. The United States is officially removing Turkey from its F-35 stealth fighter jet program after Ankara accepted the Russian delivery of its S-400 missile defense system. U.S. officials believe that NATO allied Turkey's decision to use Russian advanced radar technology could compromise the alliance's military systems in the country. The S-400 could potentially be used to target NATO jets in Turkey, including the U.S.-made F-35. Former Mexican drug kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman has received a sentence that will see him spend the rest of his life in prison. The 62-year-old Guzman was convicted in February of trafficking tons of cocaine, heroin, and marijuana as a top leader of Mexico's cartel, one of the country's largest and most violent drug-dealing groups. Again, the House of Representatives voting to hold Attorney General William Barr and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross in criminal contempt for defying congressional subpoenas related to the U.S. Census. Four Democrats voted against the measure while no Republicans supported it. Justin Amash, independent congressman from Michigan who recently left the Republican Party, voted in favor of the resolution. The criminal contempt vote against the two Trump cabinet members, that is Attorney General William Barr and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, is likely to be a little more than symbolic since the charges would be referred to Barr's Justice Department anyway. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The WHO says Ebola in the DRC is a public health emergency.
This is still a regional emergency and by no way a global threat. Why this change of opinion? There is concern about spread of Ebola from Goma, a getaway.
That's Robert Stephan, head of the WHO Public Health Emergency Committee. Uganda urges its citizens to remain vigilant against Ebola. Ugandan parliamentarian Bobi Wine says he will challenge President Museveni in the 2021 election. COMESA leaders embarked on an agenda to power regional trade, and Sudan's ruling military council and protesters signed a transitional power-sharing agreement.
It is a great moment that the people of the Sudan have reached this historic moment. God bless the Sudan and God bless Africa.
Mahmoud Darius, the Ethiopian envoy to Sudan, and we'll speak with a Zimbabwean football fan who walked from Zimbabwe to Egypt for the African Cup of Nations games. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The World Health Organization has declared the Ebola epidemic in the Democratic Republic of Congo's conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces a public health emergency of international concern. Lisa Schlein reports on the outcome of an emergency committee meeting at WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The declaration of the Ebola outbreak as an international public health emergency elevates the disease and the efforts needed to combat it to a significantly higher level of concern. Nevertheless, Chair of the Committee Robert Stephan cautions against overreacting to the meaning of this decision.
This is still a regional emergency and by no way a global threat. And why this change of opinion? There is concern about spread of Ebola from Goma, a getaway. Even though so far no cases were newly infected in this city.
On Sunday, the first case of Ebola was discovered in Goma, a city of 2 million people. The pastor infected with the virus has since died. Stephan says the recurrence of intense transmission in Beni, an earlier epicenter of the disease, and the recent murder of two Ebola health workers were among other factors that fed into the committee's decision. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus acknowledges the risk of spread of the disease in the DRC remains very high, but he says the risk of spread outside the region remains low. Although the committee has declared Ebola to be a global health emergency, Tedros says WHO does not recommend any restrictions on travel or trade.
Which, rather than stopping Ebola, can actually hamper the fight. Closing borders could have disastrous consequences for the lives and livelihoods of the people who cross the border every day for trade, education, or to visit relatives.
Since the Ebola epidemic was declared nearly 1 year ago on August 1st, WHO reports there have been more than 2,500 cases, including nearly 1,670 deaths. This is the 10th outbreak of the disease over the last four decades in the DRC. It is the second largest outbreak after the 2014 historic epidemic in West Africa that killed more than 11,300 people. WHO warns insecurity due to conflict in North Kivu and Ituri provinces, as well as tepid international financial support, are main threats to stopping the Ebola virus. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Uganda has appealed to its citizens to remain vigilant and avoid handshaking, hugging, mass gatherings to observe Ebola infection, prevention, and control practices. The Ministry of Health issued the advisory Wednesday on the day that the World Health Organization declared the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo as a public health emergency of international concern. A DRC fisherwoman died of Ebola last Wednesday after spending time in Uganda. Emmanuel Ainebiona is a senior public relations officer for the Uganda Ministry of Health. He says at present, there's no confirmed Ebola case in Uganda.
In Uganda, we have not registered any new confirmed case of the Ebola virus disease, and we have made 33 days ever since the death of the last confirmed case. However, there are reports of a fishmonger who traded on the border of Uganda and later on died in the DRC in Beni, where she tested positive of Ebola virus disease. Our surveillance teams are on the Kasese-Congo border, currently doing contact tracing, working with the counterparts in the DRC.
As you said, this fisherwoman who died in the DRC traveled to Uganda. Yes. Did you find that she was in contact with anyone in Uganda after crossing the border?
Yes, she was a regular fish trader in the market, and she interacted with some individuals at the Forex Bureau and in the market where she traded. That's why we've lifted the number of contacts that will be monitored and also vaccinated against the disease.
Do you find that, because I see in the release you put out advising people to avoid misinformation and unfounded rumors, people speculating in terms of what could happen in Uganda?
The level of awareness is high. So any person who presents at the health facility in any part, the people are quick to conclude when the person has fever. We are quick to conclude that this might be Ebola, when in some cases it's not. So we've had over 700 alerts that we have investigated and turned out to be negative.
The declaration by the World Health Organization because of the Ebola situation in Congo as a public health emergency of international concern, this is the highest ever. Did your government ever consider closing the border with the DRC because of this declaration?
There are international regulations that provide for free movement of persons, and that is currently not on our table. Even if what is coming out from the committee that starts today, it emphasizes that the communities or areas affected by the virus should be allowed to continue moving. They shouldn't be stigmatized, and Uganda is always going to ensure free movement of people, being that we are one of the largest refugee-holding countries, and also we allow facilitation of trade across the borders. What we will do is emphasize the surveillance and sharing of information with our counterparts in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Emmanuel, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you, James, for having me.
Emmanuel Ainebiwuna is the Senior Public Relations Officer for the Ugandan Health Ministry. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. Uganda pop star turned politician Bobby Wine says he will challenge longtime President Yoweri Museveni in the 2021 election. Political analysts say though his campaign journey may be thorny, Uganda needs fresh blood in its leadership, especially with Museveni in power for 33 years and no sign that he's ready to step down. Eugene Uwimana has details from Kigali, Rwanda.
It is confirmed that 7-year-old Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, known as Bobby Wine, we challenge Museveni as a leader of the popular People Power movement that has energized a large following of disenfranchised youth. Wine has already become an irritant to Museveni. Yoweri Ssenyonyi is the movement spokesperson.
I can confirm that the Honorable Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu will be challenging President Museveni for the presidency in 2021. Bobby Wine has presented such a huge threat to President Museveni and his establishment that they are fearful of him. They would be happy for him not to be on that ballot. They would actually be happy to have him dead, as you probably know. You know, they did everything they could to finish him off in Arua. We are doing everything we can to get ready.
In the incident that Ssenyonyi refers to, Wine was arrested after his driver, who was shot dead in Wine's car in Uganda's Arua district. Wine called it an attempt on his life and claimed he was badly beaten while in custody. The government has denied the allegation. Eventually, Wine was released, but authorities have forced the cancellation of some of his consults In what he calls a continued campaign of harassment, People's Power followers have a long list of changes they want if their voices are heard, and they say the list feeds fear in Museveni's administration. Some political analysts say Wine's campaign also will serve as an alarm for other African presidents who overstay their time in power. Pascal Buhura is a political scholar. He works for Rwanda Broadcasting Agency. He says Wine, like longtime opposition leader Kizza Besigye, want to change the system.
Well, it's good. He will try to shake up the system just like Kizza Besigye has been doing for years. When it comes for people like maybe Museveni also, he still has the support in some rural areas and some other areas. But again, these are people who are tired. They have no fresh ideas. They need to get out of the offices and give a chance to others to lead.
Museveni, who has held power since 1986, encouraged legal changes that have paved the way for him to stay in power longer than the constitution had allowed. He continues to have the support of many other Ugandans because of his role in stabilizing the country after the ouster of former dictator Idi Amin. Wine first came to prominence in 2017 when, as an independent candidate, he won a seat in parliament representing a constituency near Kampala. Jean Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 18th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. After months of on-again and off-again talks, Sudan's military and opposition leaders Wednesday signed a power-sharing deal that rotates control of a transitional sovereign council for a little over 3 years. The African Union's special envoy to Sudan calls the deal historic and a great achievement towards forming a civilian-led government in the country. Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Under the deal, the 11 members of the Sovereign Council, the top level of government, will be made up of 5 civilians, 5 military officials, and an 11th civilian to be elected by the 10 members. Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the head of the Transitional Military Council, will head the council for a period of 21 months. A representative of the Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition will head the council for next 18 months. The transitional government will last for 39 months before a regular government is formed. The agreement stipulates that a council of ministers, which shall not exceed 20 ministers, shall be appointed by a civilian prime minister. It also states that a legislative body will be formed within 3 months of the beginning of the transitional period. Speaking in Arabic, the African Union's special envoy to Sudan, Muhammad Hassan Labat, said after the signing ceremony that the deal paves the way for the parties to work out the details of the constitutional agreement, which is expected to specify the division of powers.
This agreement opens a new era and eases the ground for the next level, and the parties shall be able to revise and amend the constitutional declaration before the transitional period.
An emotional Mahmoud Direr, the Ethiopian envoy to Sudan, who helped mediate the deal, shed tears after ceremony, describing how the Sudanese people have been waiting patiently to see the fruits of their revolution.
It is a great moment that the people of the Sudan have reached this historic moment. The gallant army of the Sudan, the Transitional Military Council, and of course, the revolutionary youth, intellectuals, pioneers who have taken to the streets. God bless the Sudan and God bless Africa.
Speaking in Arabic, Mohamed Hamdan Himeti, the deputy head of the Transitional Military Council, who signed the agreement on behalf of the military junta, also praised the protesters for demanding change in Sudan.
This agreement is a fruit of efforts of all Sudanese people who have waited for so long to witness, which shall bring them freedom, peace, and justice. I salute all martyrs of the December Revolution. I salute all their mothers and all Sudanese women and youth.
The deal states a commission of inquiry will be created to investigate the deaths of protesters. The AU's special envoy say the parties will hold more talks on Friday to discuss the roles and responsibilities of the Sovereign Council and the Council of Ministers, which includes the appointments of head of judiciary, the chief justice, and the state governors. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Leaders representing the common market for Eastern and Southern African countries, COMESA, have embarked on an agenda to power regional trade integration by having a common border. Speaking in Nairobi, the heads of state said a common market should be implemented to grow small and medium enterprises in Africa. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Kenya's capital, Nairobi.
Heads of state and the leaders represented at the opening of COMESA High Level Business Summit in Nairobi yesterday, Wednesday, emphasized on the growth of micro enterprises towards contribution to largest share jobs and gross domestic product output. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta, speaking during the 21st COMESA Summit in Nairobi, said that a borderless territory will enhance trade in the region and therefore African leaders should embrace it.
The business communities, both regionally and globally, eagerly await the benefits of trade that will come not only with expanded markets, but with the opportunities for rapid development and access as well to innovation and technology. The desire for economic integration follows from the ambitious and political vision of African leaders as stipulated in the 1980 Lagos Action Plan and the African Union Agenda 2063, which is Africa's blueprint.
Intertrade within COMESA accounted for $7.9 billion in 2017, compared to a greater share of $86.9 billion in total global exports. Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni blames regional politics and violence as a hindrance to the trade.
How about the politics? If you push politics of identity and you therefore cause sectarianism in the society and conflict, how would the trade take place? I could see the Japanese were wondering, these Africans, they are so rich, but they are so poor.
On the other hand, Zambian President Edgar Lungu has urged each government to have the political goodwill to support the small and medium enterprises to help them penetrate the continental market.
There's competition. Now competition simply means that it will be free for all. So we as individual states should have a deliberate policy to support, promote, and incentivize these SMEs so that they are able to partake of this huge market. Otherwise, it will be a big market, free for all, but for the big boys.
In Africa, trade between partner states has remained well below average as exports to the rest of the world remain dominant. Acting Mauritian President Pile Vapur said that the miserable trade playout has brought continuous barriers to the regional trade.
To help SMEs integrate and benefit from regional and continental integration, we must promote policies and measures that will improve the business climate. For example, eliminate barriers to SMEs in obtaining licenses and business permits to set up their businesses.
At least 82% of all African countries' exports fall outside the region. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The president of the Confederation of African Football, Achmed Achmed, has given a young Zimbabwean football enthusiast a great gift, a free ticket and accommodation to the final games of the African Cup of Nations that has been going on in Egypt. You see, Alvin Zakata literally walked from Zimbabwe to Egypt for 50 days to support his country's national soccer team, the Warriors. Along the way, Zakata ran into political developments taking place in Ethiopia and Sudan and even got jailed in Sudan. Although the Warriors lost and were on their way home by the time Zakata arrived, he says he has no regrets.
I am so thrilled and overwhelmed. I feel honored to have received this kind of recognition from the staff president himself, which is the highest echelon as far as African football is concerned. He invited me to the big meeting with the CAF Executive Committee. He officially handed over my VVIP and closure tickets, my invitation, and he said he will take care of me, I'll take good care of. And he also placed an air ticket for me from Cairo to travel back to Zimbabwe.
Now, Mr. Jagat, how many days did you take to travel from Cape to Cairo?
I took 50 days to get to Egypt to accomplish my mission.
We also understand that you encountered many problems, and you are recommending that some of those problems that you faced be taken up by the African Union. What did you experience?
I encountered many problems with visa requirements. For example, in Ethiopia, they said when you enchant it, it's a visa free. But, you know, when you go to the border, they said, we require a visa. We asked why, when you are in transit, they said, no, visa transit waiver only applies when you are traveling by plane and not by road. So you need to apply for a visa. So to apply for that visa, you needed to do it over internet. And internet was shut down in Ethiopia. So we had to wait until internet was restored. That's when my colleague from South Africa gave up and retreated back to Nairobi from where he was contemplating flying back to South Africa.
You also passed through war-torn Sudan. Can you tell us about your experience there?
It was difficult, you know, because I couldn't understand the Arabic language, and the alphabetical characters of English are different from the alphabet they use in Arabic. So I couldn't read even because the flyers being distributed and graffiti all over the walls, but I couldn't read because it was written in Arabic. And on the 30th of June, which was a Sunday, it's a normal working day in Sudan. The weekend is on Friday and Saturday. So I wanted to go to the Egyptian embassy to process my papers so that I could travel safely to Egypt. But I encountered a lot of challenges in Sudan. I found myself marooned in between protesters. So it was a really difficult moment.
So what are the issues that you want the AU to address?
Well, the AU are to relax the travel requirements for Africans traveling across Africa, or to actually, you know, implement the borderless Africa ideology. That would be a great idea, because I have some of the challenges that I faced. I'm sure those are most of the challenges that are being faced by many Africans who are traveling from one African country to another country. You find that it is actually easier for a European to travel to most African countries. And sometimes the Europeans, they get the visa free to travel to African countries. And, you know, for an African, it is actually easier to travel to some European country. And it is actually cheaper to get a visa to some European country.
Alvin Jakata is a Zimbabwean football fan who walked from Zimbabwe to Egypt for the ongoing AFCON Games. He was speaking with reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo is a public health emergency of international concern, according to the World Health Organization. The WHO cited the first cases of the disease in Goma, one of the nation's largest cities, as a reason for the declaration. The WHO also called the spread of the disease alarming, with between 10 and 15 cases reported on a daily basis and 1,676 deaths since the outbreak began. Bob Kitchen, the International Rescue Committee's Vice President for Emergencies, wrote that the news is a call to action for the international community. While Goma borders with the African nation of Rwanda and contains an airport, the WHO called for states to refrain from imposing travel restrictions. After months of on-again and off-again talks, Sudan's military and opposition leaders have signed a power-sharing deal that rotates control of an executive council but leaves other key details to be determined. Under the deal, the 11-member sovereign council, the top level of government, will be made up of 5 civilians, 5 military officials, and an 11th civilian to be selected by the 10 members. That's it for this Thursday, July 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday
at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Today is